This is Pure Decking number 13 for Tuesday. I have no idea what day it is. The 10th. Tuesday the 10th.
There we go.
And, microphone's a little hot. Hang on. There we go. All right. Now that I'm not blowing out the microphone anymore, it's just me and Suave tonight. And contrary to rumors, I am not dead, although at points last week I wish I was. So, anyways, topic I wanted to cover last week, which I didn't even get to look at. I wasn't conscious most of last week. That's kind of where I was. So, sorry about missing the show, guys, but I couldn't actually drag my ass to the computer, so there was no way I was doing a show. And I'm still kind of low energy, so we'll just see what happens. But
everybody thought you were dead until you actually managed to pull out your iPad in bed and get a hold of us via Skype. We all thought you were abducted by aliens or something.
Well, you know, that would have been cooler than what happened, because then I would have had a chance to steal the fucking alien ship and drive it back, and that would have made made planning trips later. You know, having a hyperdrive right there. Oh hell yeah! It's like, yeah, sure, I'll go visit people. Why not? You know, fucking interstellar spaceship, right? So
yeah, right.
Anyways.
That's why they only abduct rednecks.
They're worried we'll steal the ship and figure out how it works. It's like, just show up at Area 51 with the alien ship. Guys, you can do whatever you want. I just want the specs.
Yeah.
That would end well, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah. No, you wouldn't get shot down at all.
So, anyways, new Ubuntu came out. I guess this is a week old now, but why not talk about it? The 1104, and the big claim in this one is they actually ditched the traditional GNOME desktop and went for this Unity desktop. Have mm-hmm. you seen it?
Yeah, I'm actually looking at some screenshots of it right now. I really like the layout.
It's not bad. It's very Mac-ish.
It's very, very clean. Yeah.
It's very Mac-ish.
It is. Although, to be fair, Mac does do a pretty good job at designing interfaces.
I guess the problem is that Linux Xorg applications, GTK applications, were not really designed with that unified taskbar up at the top in mind.
Right.
So you kind of get that Mac thing where you got to go back up to the top and hope that you've got the right window active, which is a little weird. The dock behavior is not exactly what you would expect either. I've been running it on my workbox.
Oh, okay.
And you'd think you could just drag icons around, but you really kind of can't. You almost have to unpin and repin to reorganize them. It's a little weird. I'm sure there's all kinds of tricks and stuff with the dock. I just haven't figured out yet, because I think I've played with it a grand total of 3 days.
Gotcha.
So it's not a bad interface. It certainly is going to take a little bit of getting used to. But if all you're doing running, say, an instant messenger, maybe a Twitter client in your web browser, it's fine.
Oh, and plus, you can always switch back. Like, it's not like it's that difficult.
No, you go in. You can actually go in the login screen down at the bottom. There's session. If you've ever installed like KDE and GNOME and Fluxbox and all that stuff, you just pick GNOME Classic and you get the classic GNOME desktop back.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, a lot of people were having problems with Unity that I saw, because it has to have 3D acceleration.
Oh, okay.
And well, that's. I like running Ubuntu on a lot of my older machines, and frankly, most of them are old laptops that have shitty Intel cards.
Right.
So they can't really handle a 3D interface, but they'll run everything else just fine. So
right.
I guess I'll have to run Xubuntu or Lubuntu or something like that instead of the regular build, because I don't think... there's a SKU of the Unity desktop that's 2D only, so I might play with that, but my netbook was not happy with Unity, I'll tell you that.
Oh, okay.
It was not happy. It's a new interface. It feels kind of sluggish, honestly.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think that it's just not tuned. I think that's going to
get better. It is pretty new. I'm sure they're going to be running into a lot of bugs and stuff like that.
Well, we were on version, 2. Of GNOME, and GNOME had been around for a decade. Unity is version, 1.
Yeah.
So I'm not surprised there's bugs. It's interesting. It's really interesting. I mean, it's kind of ballsy, actually, that Ubuntu would do this, that they would throw out the classic desktop they've been pushing for 4 years now. Is that, how old is Ubuntu? 4 years? 5 years?
Oh, it's going to be older than that.
It's actually not that old of a distro. I mean, it's...
Oh, okay. Well, it's got to be at least 5 years then.
You're right, because I think the first version was like 5 dot whatever.
Right.
So, okay, so we'll say 5 years. It is kind of ballsy for them to throw that out and be we're going to go with this now.
Yeah.
But...
I'm all for it, though. You got to keep with the times. If it might turn out to be better that once people get used to it, it might not.
Well, I was expecting to hate it a lot more than I do.
Okay.
I'm giving it a fair shake. I'm giving it a fair shake on one of my work machines, and it's probably going to end up on a couple of machines here. Like I said, I worry about it using the 3D hardware because I really like putting Linux on a lot of the older systems because you can run modern software on older hardware, and it usually runs fairly well.
I'm guessing if it needs 3D acceleration, it's probably going to be a little bit harder on battery life for laptops and stuff like that, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would too. I mean, again, I know you can turn all that off and go back to the classic or do the Unity 2 2D interface, but that seems like a lot of work based off the default. So right. I guess they're trying to get away from the whole concept of Linux to rescue older machines and trying to make it an alternative mainstream operating system.
Well, the only thing that's preventing me from using Linux on my main machine is really just the lack of compatible software. And then, that is that discrepancy between Windows versus Linux software is shrinking.
But, yeah.
There's still a lot of stuff that I need to run that only runs in Windows.
Well, like... Yeah, other than games, like what?
Yeah. Oh, well, mostly games.
Yeah, that's where I am, too. I keep Windows boxes around for running games. Also, I've had better luck with Windows for audio work.
Oh, okay. Yeah, absolutely, same here.
Yeah, Pulse Audio was a bad idea. I think they've got it. They've got it pretty much straightened out now. And I know they just did a new rev of Skype on Linux.
Right.
But... I don't know. That was a mess. And
well, the last one, the last version of Ubuntu that I used was 8.10, and I had nothing but audio problems on there, and I haven't actually gone back since.
Yeah, 8.04 was the last one before the switch to Pulse Audio, and I actually had several desktops running that, and they stayed at 8.04 through for a very long time because I didn't want to deal with Pulse Audio because the one time I tried to upgrade it, it just broke everything.
Yeah.
But that's, getting on several years ago now. I'm pretty sure they've got it. I'm hoping it's all straightened out now.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm pretty sure that was one of the bigger complaints about it.
Well, I haven't done any hardcore audio work on a Linux desktop since then.
Right.
I've moved back to Windows for doing the audio work. I mean, I use Linux desktop for an amazing amount of other stuff, but not.
Right.
I always avoided it for audio for that very specific reason.
Mm-hmm.
So, but anyways, I don't know. It's interesting. I may go and give KDE4 another shake. Now, I've never been a hardcore. I've never really had a strong opinion on KDE versus GNOME until KDE4 came out.
Okay.
And for some reason, KDE4 was just it just turned me off. And
oh, that's no good.
I don't really know why, because it doesn't look bad. It looks good, but. It's just, every time I sat down to use it, it was just like, wow, this is, in the way.
Oh, okay.
So.
That's pretty important when it comes to user interface. Like, it really needs to flow well.
Well, the latest rev of it is supposed to be much better about that.
Oh, okay.
And also, I should go ahead and mention, I haven't played with the Ubuntu KDE desktop that just came out with the 11.04. I've only been using the mainstream release, but I have played with, I've only gotten to play with it a little bit today. The new Backtrack came out, Backtrack 5.
Oh, okay. Yep.
And Backtrack 5, Backtrack has traditionally been a KDE 3.5 desktop. And they when KDE 4 came out, they said, nope, we're going to stick with KDE 3.5. And they did for a very long time after KDE 4 came out. And that was cool because I knew I knew Backtrack would run on anything with a GUI.
Nice.
Because KDE 3.5 is old enough that it will run on anything, and I'm really hoping somebody picks up the old 3.5 and keeps it going specifically for lower spec machines.
Right.
But I did briefly get to play with the new SKUs of Backtrack. They've finally moved into KDE 4 for the KDE desktop, and they also did a GNOME SKU. They've never done a GNOME desktop before in Backtrack. It's always been KDE.
Oh, okay.
So it looks a little weird. See Backtrack in GNOME. But it's not bad. I mean, I haven't really gotten to dig into it too much. It's Backtrack. It's got all the classic tools in it. It's got all the goodness that you'd expect. Metasploit, Armitage, and Map. I'm missing, like, 5 billion other tool sets in that thing right now, but I'm just sorry. You got to sit down and go through that pen test folder with Google just to have a shot at understanding everything that's in that distro. But I will say, when I played with the KDE 4 desktop they put together for Backtrack, I liked what they did because they really simplified it back. It's a lot like, you know, the kind of desktop you'd get on KDE 3.5. It's got the simple menu. It's not the that's one thing I never liked on KDE 4 was the start menu that they tried to. It's like, we're going to make a better Windows 7 start menu or whatever the hell it was they decided they were going to do. But I always, that thing always rubbed me the wrong way. It always felt kludgy.
Right.
But the simple menu that they worked out. So I'm going to, if I do end up running Kubuntu or something on one of my main desktops, I'm going to have to figure out how Backtrack did their configs, because that's the way I want my desktops to look.
Right.
You know, nice, simple, clean, not all that junk in the way, not that folder thing. That is one thing in KDE 4 that pisses me off, is the desktop folder is actually showing up as a folder view, and that's because on KDE 4, you can show multiple folders on your desktop, and it's just, you know, they're squares. But
right.
It's like, wow, how, that's like Windows 3.1. I'm not even interested in this. But,
yeah.
You know, you can't turn that frame off, or I guess I didn't think you could, but apparently somebody Backtrack figured it out, because you've got an icon on your desktop there, and you don't have that folder view.
Oh, okay.
So, like I said, they've got it really simplified down to more like a KDE 3.5 desktop, and I'm going to have to dive into their configs, because I think I may do, for one of my main machines here, do a Kubuntu install, since that runs better than Unity, at least just in simple testing, but I haven't played with it enough to know. Last time I played with Kubuntu, and it was on a KDE 4 desktop, it felt snappier than Unity does right now in the mainline release. How about that?
Wow.
So, well, the KDE 4's got a jump on them.
Yeah, that's true.
It's been
true.
Out for a while, so.
Yeah.
And for everybody who doesn't give a shit about Linux, we've lost the entire audience.
We had an audience?
No, not really. And then I went and missed a week, too, so any audience we were built up was gone. It's like, oh, that podcast is dead.
Oh, well. So.
Anyways.
Completely unrelated note.
Go for it.
I've been following this Google I.O. conference. They've been coming out with some pretty neat stuff. They've come out with essentially a home automation setup for Android. So, of course, now you can have Google in your house, too.
So, do they put text ads on your walls?
Yeah, right. I didn't look into that one too much, just because I don't really want Google in my house. What I found was really interesting. They've come out with an Arduino-based Android hardware interface, pretty much, where it's a input-output board, pretty much, that you hook up to an Android phone. It's basically just got pinouts on it, so you write your application in for Android, and then you can hook it up to, like, robots or UAVs or, hell, your Roomba if you want to. and just plug your phone into it. It makes it really simple to do. And I'm already a huge fan of Arduino, and having it interfaced with Android like that is just excellent.
Well, there's already been a few projects out there for controlling Arduinos with Android, but they usually require some fairly expensive hardware, so I'm guessing that this would be already designed to be tied into your phone.
Yeah.
So,
Looking at it, I'm pretty sure it's not going to be very expensive. They haven't actually come out with the price for it yet, but it's pretty much just an Arduino board.
Huh. Well, I mean, does it use the phone to do the processing, or does it have its own onboard processor, and maybe you just do the programming on the phone?
Looking at it, it looks like it's got a small processor on it, but I don't think it's going to have any sort of oomph. No more than just a regular Arduino board.
And it's not like an Arduino has any oomph to it. It's like a little 8 megahertz chip. I mean,
yeah. So, I don't think you're going to get any sort of power out of it. But I bet you anything, you'll be able to hook your phone up, offload some code, and disconnect your phone again. I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, I would hope, because, I mean, if you built these super awesome, UAV the home game, you don't want to have to leave your cell phone in it, because then that's identifiable. Yeah. So when the UAV flies into your neighbor's building, you want to be able to disown it.
Well, considering it is Arduino, like I don't see why it wouldn't be able to run independently.
Yeah. Although, I tell you, speaking of Arduinos, I know we spoke about it a while back. I still have those Teensy boards, and I haven't had a chance to do anything with them yet. I've got one I wired up into a breadboard so I can start doing some prototype work. But I haven't had a chance to really sit down and dive into it, which is unfortunate, because these Teensy boards just look amazing compared to a regular Arduino.
How do they compare size-wise?
About the same as an Arduino Pro. Have you seen those little ones? You solder them in place instead of having pins on them?
Uh-huh.
A regular Arduino is what? A couple inches by 3 inches, something like that?
Yeah, it's about the size of a cell phone or something like
that.
Yeah.
These are about the size of, the first part of your thumb.
Right. Yeah, so they're tiny. Hey?
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm going to embed one into an NES controller with an LCD screen, so, I mean, it's small.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's pretty cool. As far as capabilities go, how do they stack up against a standard Arduino board?
They're about the same. I think the processor on them is roughly equivalent to what's on the Arduino Uno, because I think it's the same chip, because the new Arduino, they were talking about how it's going to have the same kind of programmable USB interface that the Teensy has.
Oh, okay.
Because that's the big selling point for me, anyways, on the Teensy, is that the Teensy, it doesn't have to be a USB serial interface. Like I've got an Arduino Decimilla and a couple of Pros in there. The interface on them is serial. And
yeah, that's what I've got on my MakerBot.
Right. And it's I know it's a USB port, but that's because they've just got a little RS-232 to USB chip integrated right into the board. It's really a serial port.
Yeah.
And that's fine. That's for simplicity. But they've, in these new ones, it's actually integrated into the, Aimtel chip, and it can be flashed, so it'll show up as different kinds of USB devices.
That's nice.
Well, like what a lot of people do, like I make MIDI controllers with a lot of mine, because I'm insane, and I enjoy making them with arcade buttons and whatever else I happen to have laying around. But with MIDI controllers, what a lot of people do is they'll hook up the Arduino to the USB interface that's already on it, and then they'll have a little Python or a processing or something else to pick up the signals coming from the Arduino in serial and translate it to MIDI and software. And I find that introduces a ton of delay. So what I like to do is, you can get them pretty much anywhere. I like to get them on Amazon. You can get these USB to MIDI adapters. And if you look on Amazon, they're like $3.
Nice.
So what you do is you solder the serial pins on the Arduino straight into the USB to MIDI adapter.
Okay.
And that way, the Arduino is putting out raw MIDI, just like you would get from a little 6-pin DIN, right?
Yeah.
But the USB to MIDI adapter picks it up and puts it in a modern USB interface. That way you don't have to have a true MIDI interface on your machine anymore, because who does?
Yeah.
And, I've got an old Sound Blaster 16 laying around here somewhere, but I really don't want to try to jam that into one of these modern machines.
Oh, yeah.
And finding an adapter for that game port.
Yeah.
But, well, I do. Actually, we do know somebody who has a true hardware MIDI interface on his machine, but he does professional music anyways. I think we're going to play some more of his music here on the break here. Probably going to take the break a little bit early. I think it's going to be a short show. So.
Right.
But, anyways, though, but I mean, the cool thing on these Tensys and the new Arduino, the Uno, is, because I'm pretty sure it's the same chip, they can program their USB interface so they can show up, like, as a keyboard or as a MIDI device or as a mouse or USB storage. They can show up as pretty much anything. And this just opens the door for making all kinds of custom interfaces.
Oh, yeah.
So
no, I'm really liking the direction that this is going for that, just because it makes it so easy, you know.
Oh yeah, well that's one of the nice things about the Arduino interface is it's basically a wrapper on C, because you program these things in C.
Yeah.
And Arduino is basically a library that's a wrapper on it to make it friendlier.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's really all it is.
Because you know, like I was looking in like back in the past, looking into getting into building circuits and stuff like that, and really the roadblock that I ran into was like flashing chips. It was just
it was a pain in the ass to do old school flashing, like basic.
You have
stamp?
To get all kinds of what do they call them, burners for different types of chips and stuff like that.
Yeah, you actually have to have an interface for each individual kind of chip.
Yeah,
I'm thinking back now, like a basic stamp kit to actually do anything with it, you're spending at least $300.
Yeah, exactly.
And the chip is $100 of that. And if you burn out the chip, oops, you're done. Which is
quite likely.
Yeah. And, you know, of course, the Arduinos, the chip's, you know, $2.
Mm-hmm.
You can actually use the JTAG interface on an Arduino board and flash the chip back with the bootloader if you need to.
Yeah.
Kind of a pain in the ass, but you can do it.
Oh, yeah.
It's easier just to buy them with the bootloader already installed. But at least you don't have to get those chips where you have to get the infrared light to reset them. Oh man.
Yeah.
I don't want to talk about those. Those things are a pain in the ass. So. Or flashing EEPROMs, the ones where it's destructive to flash the chip.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they wear out after like, you know, 50 flashes or something dumb like that.
Yeah, it's almost useless for, you know, like that's one of the things I like about the Arduinos. It's really reusable.
Well, it's reusable and they're cheap. They're like $20.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you're going to build the UAV that, you know, is going to scream jihad and go into the neighbor's, you know, house, you can afford to lose it.
Yeah.
No, I've not lost a UAV into a neighbor's house. Boy, I don't know why everybody keeps asking me that. So we're going to go ahead and go into break here. I think we're going to be looking at a fairly short show tonight.
All right.
And I'm going to mute the call. If I can remember how to do that. There we go. Call is muted, and here's your music. Just a little bit of Patient Zero for you tonight. Let's see here. Call should be back up. Suave, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Awesome. Well, I guess the big news today, since we've covered everything else, is apparently it's now going to be SkypeNet, or Skype.net, Skynet. Microsoft bought Skype.
Yeah. Soon to be known as Microsoft Live Voice Communication Enterprise Edition.
You think they're really going to bother to rebrand it?
No, they're definitely keeping the Skype brand. It's way too valuable for them to change it.
I'm just wondering, did they buy it for the IP or did they buy it for the user base? Because we both know they didn't buy it for the marketing opportunities.
I think that they're going to just exploit it to the max. They're going to use the technology and all kinds of other stuff. They definitely want the user base. I think that worked out to like $1,000 a user. That's up there. Because, you know, I'm reading here 8.5 billion, 7 billion, 8 billion.
It's a lot.
But, yeah, it's a lot of money. And, like, Skype doesn't make that much money in
a year, Skype,
actually.
Skype doesn't, not only does it not make much money, it costs a lot of money to run.
Yeah.
Heavy saying in the chat here, ads, but,
ads, but, like, looking at this here, in 2010, Skype made $860 million.
Really?
Yeah.
I wouldn't have expected it to be that much.
Now, that's probably gross.
Oh, it's got to be.
So, you know, like, well, let's knock that down to maybe $300 million or something like that in profit. So, you know, to actually recoup that kind of cost, there's going to be, like, they're really going to have to use this to its full potential.
Well, I'm just wondering, are they going to rip the technology out and drop it in like their own, what, Link? LYNC? It's their replacement for Windows Messenger.
They'll probably do that. They'll probably still keep Skype, but from what I can tell, the Skype technology is far superior to what they're using right now. So I don't see why they wouldn't use that same technology.
Well, the other thing is they've got a lot of deals going on right now for Windows Phone 7.
Mm-hmm.
Especially with the whole Nokia mess, which
yeah.
I'm still sore over because I liked the MAMO stuff.
Yeah, me too.
So,
but that's the way she goes. I think the whole MAMO thing, they just didn't put it on enough devices, and they're running two separate operating systems at a time.
Yeah,
and they kind of just spread themselves out too thin, and it never really got developed to its full potential.
They made the classic mistake of a company not knowing how to work open source. They threw it out there and thought the community was going to take care of itself, and it tried.
Mm-hmm.
It really, really did. I mean, I had a couple of 770s. I had an 810. I sold the 810
here
on eBay, but
I still use my 810 on a daily basis.
What do you do with it?
I read eBooks.
I use it as a reader.
Yeah, I just find it's got the perfect form factor for that. The screen is the right size, and the volume rocker switch is exactly where my thumb would be when I'm holding it, and it's just the easiest thing in the world for reading e-books.
Really? See, I've been reading on the iPad, and I keep going back and forth between that and my you know, Gen 1 Nook.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure.
I like the idea of the larger form factor e-readers, but there's something nice about being able to just hold it in one hand. Like, it's actually, to me, it's more convenient than an actual book.
Well, that's the problem I have with the iPad, is the weight issue. You cannot one-hand it. The controls, you actually could one-hand it. It's just your arm gets tired. You got to hold the thing up. Now, the Gen 1 Nook, one of the reasons I keep coming back to it is it doesn't weigh anything.
Yeah.
It's not as big as the pad. But you can one-hand it. It's not a problem to do that.
Right.
So it's just a question of what reader do I have handy. And I'm not even reading that. Heavy would be on the call right now, except he sounds worse than I did last week. So we're not even reading that one out loud. So we'll just let the listeners speculate. But
Well, you definitely need one hand.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you got to have one hand free. But,
But really, nobody uses Apple devices for porn. They don't allow porn on there. That's what Android devices are for.
That's right. Wait a minute.
I think Playboy even has like a Playboy app and stuff like that. All it has is articles. There's no nudity on it, and it's Playboy.
Well, I think that's the funniest damn thing in the world that Apple won't allow that stuff in the App Store because they put a fucking web browser on. You know, it comes with one.
Oh yeah, well, yeah. It's not difficult to get. They just they want to keep their image up,
I guess. I mean, it's silly.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, there's a camera and a photo viewer. You can, in fact, put porn on an iDevice. I'm just going to say that right now.
Yeah.
So.
But to be fair, you pretty much want to shy away from any porn-related Android apps because, you know, you look at the amount of malware you get online from any sort of porn, and you're running into those exact same risks with Android as well.
Yeah. Well, of course, Android, it's not locked down like the iDevice stuff is. I mean, you can jailbreak iPhones, but you don't even have to do that for Android devices, do you? You can just roam whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess it'd be nice for doing your own stuff, but...
Oh, yeah. Like, for example, Notch, the guy who made Minecraft, he actually had an Android app that he posted on his Twitter that he had done for a contest some time back. And it's kind of like this dungeon runner type game. And yeah, he just posted the APK on his Twitter. You just download it, load it onto your phone, and run it.
Was it any good?
Yeah, it wasn't too bad. It was definitely unfinished, so you couldn't.
Well, he's good at unfinished games.
Yeah, it was more of just a proof of concept.
Yeah.
It would be awesome. Like, it had a great interface and it ran really nice and everything like that. It wasn't finished.
Yeah. Well, I've been pretty out of the loop here. So, what's this mess with Anonymous now? Did they have some kind of a split?
Yeah. Now, basically, it looks like they've kind of had a split in their ranks, and you know, like as Anonymous, they don't really have any official leaders.
Yeah, it's not like they have ranks. I mean,
yeah, but you know, with any group of people, some people emerge as the ones who kind of direct their actions. It's natural progression of human interactions. So one of these people, who I guess was running one of the IRC channels or something like that, ended up locking down some of the websites and some of the IRC channels, and have been like auto-banning people who mention the word Sony and stuff like that. It's all kind of shady. Looking at it, I'm almost wondering if they just got infiltrated by somebody.
Yeah, maybe they just got compromised, or you know, it wouldn't be the first time a law enforcement agency has said, you're going to give me your passwords, and then I'm going to sit at your computer and be you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So that's kind of what I'm thinking has happened. Now, it's by far not the end of Anonymous or anything like that. They've just been split up pretty much at this point, and they've lost a lot of their ability to communicate because their main IRC channels, including the Hub, which is like where the elites of Anonymous, I guess you would call them, the people who really know what they're doing, that's where they meet, and that actually got taken out too.
Huh.
So it's pretty much like a lot of their methods of communication have been taken down.
You know, that's interesting that they've... I figured they would have been using some of the different darknet stuff that's out there for doing distributed communications as really hard to knock out. Like the old Waste system is one that comes to mind.
Right.
There's another one. It was a...
Well, you know, odds are they're probably using something like that too, and we just would have no clue that they were.
Well, of course, but...
It's not something they're going to advertise.
Well, I would hope not. I mean, I certainly don't advertise my undernets.
yeah.
Oops. Let me just go back and edit that. Oh, it's live. Fuck.
Yeah, right.
So, anyways, I imagine it's not as big a setback as they're letting on. Hell, they could just be making it up for drama.
Oh, yeah, it's entirely possible. But, you know, like something like that, it's like the Hydra. You cut off one head and two more grow back.
Well, it's like, well, hell, trying to take out Anonymous now is going to be like when the record industry was trying to take out file sharing sites. They squish one, and about 36 show up.
Pretty much, and they've all but given up on actually taking them down at the source.
Yeah, they're suing everybody.
Yeah, and you know, they are taking down some websites here or there, but yeah, once again, you take down a website, and within the hour, it's back up under a different domain.
Yeah. So
yeah. That's not a big deal. And, you know, of course, this whole anonymous thing all started from the whole Sony debacle. And I think we've talked about it a little bit, but some more information has come out since then. Like how...
Well, I know we were laughing at Sony, and then we're like, oh, they got their credit cards. But yeah. I think we were not doing the show when all the bullshit was coming out that Sony was actually trying to blame Anonymous, trying to say Anonymous was the ones who hacked into them.
Oh, yeah, and they said that they found a text file called Anonymous with the words, "We are Legion," on it. And, you know, that's just the most idiotic thing. That we're, like...
Why would you provoke them? I mean, that's not just asking for it. That's walking over and drop-kicking the hornet's nest. I mean...
And, like, that's just not something that Anonymous would do, unless it was, like, some little 13-year-old script kiddie. But that's not who hacked Sony. This was an organized hack.
I would hope not. Although they're coming out saying that the, you know, Sony Online was running unpatched Apache, like ancient versions of Apache, no firewalls.
No firewalls.
The fuck! How do you run how do you have a modern internet connected system and not have even a basic ACL?
I can guarantee what happened was some CEO's son got hired on to do, run up their tech department because he was good with computers or something retarded like that. And really, like, you really got to know what you're doing when you're running a system like that. Like, you really, really got to know what you're doing.
It's very handy to have a clue.
Yeah.
Somebody needs to go over there with the clue bat and beat the clue bat into them. This, yeah. This here is... I'll have to do the spill we had to do at one point when I was working on the help desk. This here is the Jesus stick. Hold up a broom handle. We call it this because it will put the fear of God into you, because if you fuck up enough, you will understand why.
Yeah.
But there are tons of people out there who are actually information security professionals. I kind of like to consider myself among that crowd. That all you have to do is call them. And most of them are happy to talk about it for free of how you should probably go about setting this stuff up, and then you can hire them to do it.
Yeah. But, somebody dropped the ball. That's all it comes down to.
Somebody didn't just drop the ball. They reached over and tried to pick up the soap in prison. I mean, holy shit.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's very cool. It could have been some guy who was just fresh out of university or something like that, or, you know, some really prestigious school that just didn't teach him shit about the real world. And
I guess. I mean,
him in charge. Because, like, that's the only way I can see that possibly happening. Like, that's... I admit, I don't know a lot about computers, but I would have at least had up-to-date software and a firewall.
Well, okay. Like, there are some very... You know, you want to have a secure network, let's start off with the very, very basics. You patch your software.
Yes.
You firewall your border machines.
Yes.
Then you start doing data segmentation. You do what's called data silos. In other words, why the fuck can I talk to the servers that hold the billing information from the servers that run Gran Turismo, whatever multiplayer version?
Yeah, exactly.
Those servers should not be able to communicate to each other. And that's something you can do with simple ACLs or a VPN. Not a VPN. Yep. DMZ.
Okay. Right.
VPN is something completely different. And I'm still sick, so I'm going to get my terms wrong. No energy. But this is not really that hard. Mm-hmm. Now, coming into a system after the fact and getting it secure is hard.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But if you're going to design it from the ground up, and the Sony PlayStation Network is not that old.
No, it's not.
So unless they were migrating old systems over to run it from something else, there's no reason not to design this properly from scratch.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Sony. It's not like they can't afford to hire a couple of security consultants.
Yeah. You know, I wonder if you're right there. We're using some legacy software or something like that, and it only worked with the older version of Apache or something retarded like that, because you see that sort of thing happening all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Where people are still running Windows 98 or something like that on their systems because that's what their software works with.
Well, and you know, there is a good business argument to be made that if it isn't broke, don't fix it. But here's the problem. Yeah. It was broke.
Yeah, exactly. I can't wait to start seeing numbers on how much money Sony's lost over this.
Oh, I don't think we'll ever get real numbers. We'll see estimates and insane amounts.
Well, yeah, because Sony's never going to announce how much they've lost, but you'll have experts in the field who will make some estimates.
You said Microsoft had made a pretty fun statement.
Oh, yeah. Actually, that wasn't me. I think that was somebody else. But
Was it Heavy who said that? Or
yeah, they're basically saying, oh, yeah, all you PlayStation owners have our deepest sympathies. But just remember, you can still play all of your favorite games online on the Xbox system.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure if you want to go buy a PS3 for real cheap right now, just hop on eBay because it's going to be flooded.
Oh, man. Well, if you think about it, though, PS3s, you don't have to take them online. And assuming you get them that they haven't been, you know, you can get the jailbreak they did, load up Linux on them, and, you know, build yourself some fairly nice clusters.
Oh, yeah.
So, I say take advantage of this to get yourself some cheap hardware and build some, you know, computing system sister.
Well, and you know, like I still use my PlayStation all the time for like hopping onto Netflix or just hooking. Like I've got it networked to my home network here, so sure. I can just play any video files on my computer. It's great for a home theater PC. That's pretty much what I use it for. I haven't played a game on that thing in months.
Well, it's not like you can. So,
you can.
I know. So.
Well, some games anyway, unless you're running something like Mag, which only works online.
Well, wasn't there a big kerfuffle because Portal 2 wants to authenticate, and you can't play, and it's been down the whole time?
Right. Yeah, I'm sure.
So I would be pissed if, you know, paid $60 for Portal 2, and everybody's online talking about how great it is, and I don't have the soundboard loaded up where I'd hit the space button, but...
Well, yeah, because I know for a fact that the PS3 version came with the Steam version that you could play on your computer. But yeah, you had to actually activate it through Steam on the PlayStation 3 in order to activate it on your computer.
Well, but a lot of people who'd buy it for the PlayStation 3 are the hardcore console gamers, and as far as I'm aware, most hardcore console gamers don't maintain PCs that would actually run it. They have some old beater laptop to get on 4chan or whatever and look up their codes, but they do everything on their consoles.
Mm-hmm. This is true. Oh, well.
Anyways, I'm pretty much out. I think I'm done. Unless you've got something burning you want to cover that, you know, is not gonorrhea.
No, I think we've pretty much done everything.
So, yeah, we have covered the internet. It is done. You don't have to read it anymore. Ha-ha.
Yeah, right.
And we're going to go ahead and close out a little bit early here. I'm still recovering, and... I didn't think to badger anybody else to get on the stream here. So I'm just going to close out with a little bit more Patient Zero and just mute the call here. And I will be back to yell at the internet on Thursday. We'll be right back.
Are always right, so the rebels got to lose.